It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Has time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. The Giants with a big win, rebounding off their loss to the Cowboys last week. They knock off the division rival Washington Redskins 24-17. A old school Giants type of comeback, Lance. They go down 14-0 in this game, but the offense does enough to rally the team back, and the defense puts the clamps down on that Redskins offense after those two early scores, the second one coming early in quarter number two.
They were able to get some takeaways. Justin Tuck, 4 sacks. He came into this game with just 2.5. I think that was a huge turnaround, and they contained Alfred Morris. Morris only had about 26 yards last night, so they basically said, you know what, we'll give RG3 some room and flexibility to run off the edges, but we're going to make sure that they're not going to set the tone with that number one rushing attack in the NFL, and that's been a trend, John. You go back all the way to week 4, Jamal Charles, Adrian Peterson, Matt Forte, they have pretty much honed in and locked down every top-notch running back they've gone up against.
And remember, 20 of those running yards for Robert Griffin III came on a meaningless run at the end of the first half as time expired. So he was even less effective than those numbers might indicate. And you're right, they seemed to turn him into a runner. They shut down Alfred Morris. And in the passing game, and we talked about this during the week, Lance, they were susceptible, the Washington Redskins, to pressure. Robert Griffin III tends to hold the ball a long time, and the Giants took advantage of it. Justin Tuck, a turned back the clock type of game. And the Giants' pass rush really forced 2 or 3 Redskins punts in that fourth quarter that allowed them to hold the lead.
That's why I said the defense really responsible for this victory, because the offense, and we've been talking about this for weeks, John, this was the latest attractive matchup that they had when you look at that Redskins defense. And once again, it did not pan out. We were talking about in the pregame, would Eli Manning reach 250 passing yards?
Nope.
And he wound up with 235, got the one touchdown to Brandon Myers. Also had the pick, which was the deflection off of Reuben Randall into the hands of Brandon Merriweather. But that's why the defense needed to do the heavy lifting. And you mentioned that Robert Griffin III holds on to the football too often, and I thought that most of Justin Tuck's sacks, believe it or not, came because the secondary, I think, did a good job, and Tuck was able to move from the left to the right. It wasn't as if he was just bull rushing the guy and then immediately getting the sack. He had some time and flexibility to maneuver around that O-line.
And you mentioned that one Eli Manning turnover. I want to get back to that for a second, because I think that play was pretty indicative of a lot of the turnover issues the Giants have had. It was Eli's fault. He threw a bad pass that went high to Reuben Randall, went off the receiver's hands, and got intercepted. But why did Eli Manning's pass sail high? Why did he rush the throw? He had pressure on the back end. Will Beattie, who had a terrible game, was abused by Brian Arakpo pretty much all day. His worst game since very early in the season. He had rebounded after a tough start this year. But boy, he got really, really worked on by Brian Arakpo in that game. So Manning gets pressured, feels the pressure, tries a little sling sidearm throw right before he gets hit. He sails it, it gets deflected, gets intercepted. It's Eli's fault. He either should take that sack or throw a better pass. But again, it's the offensive line, and it was, I think, a factor again in this game, Lance. Didn't give him consistent time to throw the football, and when he gets pressured, bad things happen.
This was the 6th different offensive alignment that the Giants have utilized. That just goes to show you what type of a season it's been for this team.
In fairness, since week number 5, it's the 3rd. So it's only been the 3rd different alignment in about, 7-8 weeks. So I think this group should be pretty comfortable together, even though you slid James Brewer in at left guard and Kevin Booth moved to center. And quite frankly, who's the guy getting beat? This guy that's been a left tackle all year. It wasn't James Brewer that was getting beat, though. I saw him on 1 or 2 plays have some problems. It was Will Beattie.
but the communication between Brewer and Beattie is a key element in terms of the offensive line playing at a high level. The other thing that I noticed, John, was there seemed to be a miscommunication at times between Beattie and Andre Brown, whoever the running back was, to determine, listen, are we going to let the guy go by so the running back can chip him, or am I responsible for blocking Brian Arakpo?
Or even more so than that, if you're going to have help from the running back and you know it's coming outside, you got to force the pass rusher outside a couple times. Andre Brown's coming around the edge to chip, and Will Beattie lets Arakpo beat him to the inside, which is obviously a problem. But more positive than negative in this game, Lance. And I think if the Giants are going to win games the rest of this year, and they have four games remaining, we'll see how they do, have a chance to go 9-7 if you run the table. These are the type of games you're going to have to win. I don't think at this point there you can depend on this offense to score you any more than 24 points. They haven't scored more than 24 points since the Green Bay game. And before that, they hadn't scored 24 points since the beginning of the season against Dallas. So I think you're looking at probably the maximum output for this offense is at 24. The defense is going to have to win games.
And keep in mind, in that Packers game, JPP returns an interception for a touchdown. So they didn't even really get 24.
Great point. Great point. And they had two other turnovers in that game as
correct.
Well. So this is the type of game this team's going to have to win. You like to see them run the ball a little bit better. They ran the ball well in the first half in this game. The second half, though, they struggled mightily running the football. Just to give you some numbers, overall, the Giants finished with 80 rushing yards on 23 carries. That's a 3.5-yard average. But in the first half, the Giants ran for 73 yards on 11 carries, which means the rest of the way in half number two, doing the quick math here, okay. They only ran for 7 yards on 12 carries in half number two. So the running game good early. You had that one really big run from Peyton Hillis. You had the long touchdown run from Andre Brown. But otherwise, boy, this running game didn't get consistent yards on the ground.
And that's supposed to be the one reliable element of this offense, John, given the fact that the passing game has not been able to ignite since the start of the season. So you want to at least be able to balance off of the running game and also have the opportunity to run X amount of carries in the first half, X amount of the second half, and to keep being productive. Unfortunately, it was really a tale of two halves, I would say, for the running game, John, and it was a tale of two halves for the defense, because remember, they get down 14-0 early, long, lengthy drives for the Redskins, then all of a sudden, just something clicked. They contained RG3, and they forced the Redskins to be one-dimensional.
Yeah, and we'll get to your calls in a second at 201-939-4513, and that was a question me and Bob Papa asked in the locker room after the game to pretty much every player, how'd you guys turn around to give them those first two touchdowns? And you really got different answers. You know, we refocused. Will Hill said we were too psyched to start the game. We calmed down and, you know, just worried about making our assignments sound. So you don't really have a good finger on what they did, but whatever they did, it certainly worked, because that Redskin offense couldn't do anything in half number two.
They struggled immensely, and part of it was because Alfred Morris just could not find any holes, and the other part of it was because Robert Griffin III, as you touched on earlier, John, became solely a runner, and if there's anything that he struggled with throughout the course of the season has been his running ability, because he hasn't had that confidence that he showcased throughout his rookie year.
And the Giants knocked him around an awful lot. He got hit. John Beeson on that, even that first drive, he went around the edge. Though a generous spot, got a first down on that fourth one, but Beeson laid the wood to him, and I think that kind of set the tone for the rest of the game.
Well, as effective as the Redskins' running game has been as a result of this Redskins' O-line, believe it or not, they've had trouble pass protection with regard to keeping RG3 upright, because the last three games they had him sacked 14 times, and then another 5 sacks today via the Giants.
201-939-4513. Let's get to your phone calls and say hello to Roldy in Bayshore, New York. Roldy, good morning.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Lance.
How are you? Good morning.
Good game yesterday. John, just like you said, a lot of positives and negatives. I mean, happy to see Justin Tuck being beast mode yesterday. Happy to see that. And again, time and time, every single week, Antrell Roll and even Will Hill, man. Those two guys, man, I want to see these guys stay together in that secondary for a long term, because I like how these guys play. They play like linebackers.
Yeah, Roldy, honestly, I think the one thing that sets the Giants aside from the other three teams in the NFC East in a good way, they by far in the division have the best safety combination. Roll and Will Hill are both legitimately good safeties in this league.
Yeah, I like those two guys, and I would like to see them, you know, in years further on. And but, you know, overall, you know, even though that they got down, you know, 14-0, they stayed together like they always said, you know, after every single game, every week, you know, just stay together. And then they came up with the win. But with the negatives, I mean, Will Beattie, man, is just, I mean, I know you gave him a courtesy. You know, he started having good games, but it seems like every week this guy gets beat. He's just he's horrendous. I really do not like Beatty. I don't like him. You know, he just yesterday he got abused. He was getting abused like a little child. He was abused yesterday. It was just mind-boggling. But as far as also the special teams, I would like to see a better kick returner, like a guy like Holiday. That's on what team is
that? On the Broncos. Yeah.
Because we haven't had a guy like that since you know Dominique Hixon, and right now it seems like we always calling fair catches. We're getting you know the most probably 10 yards. After a punt or a kick, it's just, you know, I would like to see something better, you know, in that aspect. But overall, like you said, you know, more positives than negative. I was just happy to see Justin Tuck play the way he played. Will Hill, Antoine Roll, again, those two guys, they never give up. They're just beasts. They're just hitting guys, and I like what I'm seeing right now.
All right, Roly. Thanks for the call,
Thank
pal.
You.
All right, Roly. And John Beeson's another guy that I would throw into the mix, John. 17 tackles, 13 solo. He was all over the place.
Yeah, and after a couple quiet weeks, John Beeson had a very big game against the Redskins, no doubt about it. And I want to go back to something Roldy said, and he brought up Trindon Holiday, which I thought was interesting. And a guy like Trindon Holiday will never do kick returns for the Giants. Do you know why? He already got benched in Denver for not protecting the ball and fumbling the football. And whether you agree with it or not, Tom Coughlin's number one priority on both kick and punt return especially, is ball protection. And even though Reuben Randall probably isn't going to break many for long gains or touchdowns, he does catch the football pretty darn well. So right now, as Bill Parcells used to say about Phil McConkie, Reuben Randall is a punt catcher more so than a punt returner.
And Holiday was also cut by the Texans originally because of fumbling issues. He's had a track record of that. He's had a bad history. So that's a big reason why he wouldn't fit into the Giants model.
Now, then, there are guys like Dwayne Harris for the Cowboys, Devin Hester, who are really good returners, and they don't fumble the football. So would it be great if the Giants could find one of those guys? Sure. But, again, I don't think that guy's on the roster right now.
Plus, I would point to a lot of other issues and voids that they'd have to fill before they necessarily turn to special teams. And as inconsistent as this group has been, as Roldy touched on, yesterday at least they got somewhat of a game-changing play because of the bad snap to Rocca, the partial deflection, and the Giants were able to start right in Redskins territory. So that was a nice gift to get as a result of special teams.
201-939-4513. Let's go back to our phone and say what's up to Steve down in Washington, D.C. Steve, what's going on, pal? My fault.
Hey, what's happening, guys? I guess I'm happy we only won. I didn't go to my office and not hear anybody's mouth this morning. But I tell you, it was an extremely rough start, man. I mean, I almost lost it real early, guys.
Steve was feeling the pressure, man. Steve was feeling that pressure early. He was worried about 9 a.m. in the office, getting the emails, getting the people stopping by the desk.
Hey, listen, you know, we just came out so flat. It just bothered me. I didn't see anybody early other than, you know, Beeson, who looked like they had any energy at all, you know. And quite frankly, it didn't look like the defense did anything until the offense finally, you know, moved the ball a little bit. And then they decided that the offense was going to play, we might as well play. But I do think that, you know, the defense obviously deserves a lot of credit for the victory we had yesterday. But, guys, you know, I just sing the same old song. You know, I tell you, the play calling, which is mind-boggling to me, I just don't understand.
What was wrong with the play call?
Third and two, and we're throwing the ball. I mean, it's one thing, you know, we didn't run the ball, you know, as well as I would have liked either. But at that time, early on, I thought we should have ran the ball on third and two. But, you know, the play calling itself, the play itself, it seemed like we keep running that same delayed handoff. Eli literally just hands the balls off and puts his hands on his hips. We don't sell anything. I mean, I'm just like, it's no shocker that we do not get any yardage.
Well, Steve,
out
Steve,
of that same play.
Steve, time out for a second. You realize sure. On that third and two, Eli Manning can basically call two different plays at the line of scrimmage there, a pass or a run. So if you want to go after Gilbride, it's equally on Eli Manning. He looked at what the Redskins had lined up, and he decided to go with the pass in that situation rather than the run. Look, I'd have to go back and look at it, but what if the Redskins had 8-9 guys in the box there? Do you want to run it on third and two if they have 9 guys in the box and are playing single coverage all over the field?
Yeah, I do. I mean, considering, you know, I mean, looking at, you know.
All right, that's fine. Then you're not going to get the first down.
Well, I mean, you know, I disagree with that, but hey, you know, that's okay. We can disagree on that. But I mean, it wasn't just, you know, the third and two guys. I'll tell you, you know, I just didn't even, you know, like I said, the play call itself, when we do run the ball, it's way too predictable. I mean, we got to get some movement on the line. We got to sell something. But the most disturbing thing to me was just the tempo of it. I mean, I just can't believe that, you know, I mean, hey, they reminded us of the tempo early on in the game when they came out, you know, in a hurry-up mode. And here we go, you know, we're just almost getting delay of game calls. We're just moving so slow. I just doesn't look very, you know, just doesn't look very good to
Steve,
me.
Steve, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Did you like the Kevin Gilbride play call when they got Victor Cruz on the linebacker? He ran a double move and was wide open for a touchdown, but Eli Manning overthrew him and Victor Cruz decided not to put two hands out to catch the ball. Did you like that play?
I did.
Well, that's because the players didn't execute the damn thing, Steve.
I didn't call Gilbride's name on it. I just said the play call. I don't know who's changing, whether it's Eli or whether it's Gilbride. But I'm going to say this last thing because I know we got a lot of calls this morning, guys. And I asked Paul last week to, you know, to kind of see if he could come up with a stat to see how many times Eli has actually thrown the ball in the end zone. And what I notice is we keep running these short routes. No one is being hit in stride. So, to me, it shouldn't be a surprise that Nick is having a down year, because you can blame it on the line. I don't care who you blame it on, but there's a problem when we can't hit anybody in stride at all. And that, you know, I set 24 points. Let's see what that can do. I mean, the defense is playing well, but not going to take us very far.
Well, Steve,
guys,
though, you could, sure. I don't mean to cut you off, but you can make the point that part of the success that the Giants have had at times is because the offense has evolved and they've utilized some of those short passes. I understand they're not going for the big bombs and they're not getting guys in open space all the time to get into the end zone, but when they've utilized some of the running backs and the wide receivers with these shorter routes, that's when the Giants have had the most success on offense. So it's not as if they're desperately in need of that big play.
Only one making plays like that is Victor Cruz. Nobody else. We cannot continue to throw behind the sticks and think we're going to win games. We got to at least throw to the sticks.
Well, they got
to
get separation,
you know,
then, Steve.
Not an athlete. What's that?
They got the receivers have got to get separation. For example, Steve,
you know,
yesterday,
that, I'll,
Steve.
I'll come down to the offensive line, which is obviously, you know, Beattie, rough day at the office to say the least. So I don't know really what the problem is, guys. I just do know one thing. When I keep seeing us stop behind the sticks, you know, and looking at the personnel we have, it's no wonder that we're not able to sustain drives. So I'd like to see. I don't know what the solution is, obviously, other than the offensive line playing better, you know. But it just looks like the play calling. I just don't understand why these guys are doubling back before the sticks. Just don't understand, especially with Brandon Myers. He can't shake anybody. So, hey, guys, I'm not going to hold you off today. Thanks for taking my call, and I'll definitely be listening off air. And, you know, not a bandwagon, so, you know, a hard fan. I'll still love my Giants, but I think we can do better.
All right,
so,
Steve.
Go Big Blue. Have a great week, guys.
All right, Steve. Thanks for the call. And I want to go back to a play in this game, and I'm trying to find the damn thing. I thought it was in the first half, but I didn't see the play. Eli Manning threw a slant route to Akeem Nicks, and it's in the summary. I just need to find the play here. I believe it was on the third down.
Sorry,
if I can find it here. Let's see.
Do you remember what quarter that was in?
There we go. Third and four, right after the two-minute warning. The Giants trying to drive down and tie the game at 14 at the end of the half. And the Giants have a third and four, and Eli Manning threw that slant route to Akeem Nicks. And that pass was literally about a half second from being picked off by D'Angelo Hall. They almost possessed the ball simultaneously, and
yes,
Nicks wrestled the ball away from Hall. And that's one of those plays where Akeem Nicks just isn't getting the separation necessary to get the ball consistently. That ball was almost picked off because Nicks isn't getting open. He's not breaking away from Hall. So Eli did a good job getting the ball in a tight spot. But, Lance, if that's not executed perfectly, it could have been six the other way. And another play in this game, and this one's more on Eli, it was late in the game. Eli's getting brought down on a sack. As he's going to the ground, he throws the pass outside to Brandon Myers for a first down. Everyone claps, great play by Eli, great play on offense. Well, that's the same type of stupid decision that turns into interceptions the other way, when you're throwing the ball as you're going to the ground. and throwing it to the outside with a linebacker or a safety not far from Brandon Myers. These are the types of plays where earlier in the year, those two plays would have been picks when things were going bad for the Giants. They didn't happen to be on Sunday, but it's the same type of dangerous plays the Giants are getting themselves into because A, the receivers aren't getting the separation they need, and B, Eli isn't getting the pass protection he needs, so he's making throws while he's getting hit.
Well, he was seeing a lot of pressure in his face last night, and that was a big reason why some of his throws were affected. You were referencing that third and one play,
yes,
which was on that final drive, mm-hmm, which set up the Giants for that Josh Brown field goal that pushed the lead to seven, where Manning literally has a defender wrapped around his ankle, and he gets the ball over to his left. And Myers did a great job extending the ball to get that first down.
After he bobbled it.
It was a second away, like you said, from maybe becoming a pick six. It was that close, the difference between getting the first down, continuing the drive, or giving the Redskins potentially a go-ahead touchdown.
And look, I didn't mean to exclude Eli Manning there. That's also Eli Manning decision-making and accuracy.
Absolutely.
He air-mailed the pass to Reuben Randle, even though the pressure was there. He still threw it high. And again, we've seen Eli, as he's getting dragged down, try to make throws before, and it turns into a disaster. And that one, the Brandon Myers happened to work. But, and Bob Papa said during the radio broadcast, that's the play where it's like, no, 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 no. Okay, good play. That's what it is. Because you're putting the ball in harm's way.
Well, that's why it's a combination of Eli Manning's decision-making and maybe, yeah, at times Gilbride's play calling. But you really can't say it's only on one versus the other.
Well, it's also on the offensive line, correct, for not protecting. But it's also on the wide receivers on the D'Angelo Hall play, for example, not getting the separation they needed to get.
Now, Steve was referencing the pair of third and two calls. And this was early in the third quarter. Okay. There was one third and two, which was on the Giants' first drive of the third quarter. By the way, once again, they're forced to punt. I mean, when was the last time the Giants actually did something on the first possession of the second half? They only have 3 points, and they basically threw deep to Victor Cruz down the middle. Now, I said to myself the same thing that Steve was saying, where maybe in this situation, regardless how many guys are in the box, you've had some success on the ground, at least in the first half. Why not try to at least go back to the ground?
I get it, but already on that drive, they had rushed it twice for only 2 combined yards on those 2 running plays, and that was the play where they had Victor Cruz wide open on a corner blitz on a linebacker. You would sign up for that play any day of the week. I understand where you're coming from. You want to get the first down, move the sticks, continue the drive. I get that, but they clearly saw something where they thought they could have a mismatch. They had the corner blitz come. They had Cruz on a linebacker, and if it's a better throw by Eli again, not as accurate as you want him to be, and if Victor Cruz does a better job of getting that second arm out there to extend and make that catch, that could have been a touchdown from 45 yards away. So I can't get too mad at the play when the play put the Giants into a situation. If the players executed it properly, they could have a 45-yard touchdown. You know what I mean?
And that drive stalls at the Washington 48. Then after they force the Redskins to punt, they get another third and two, and this is the Eli Manning interception, which clearly was on him, where he threw too high to Reuben Randle and it goes into the hands of Brandon Merriweather.
And again, the first play of that drive, what did you have? An
no
Andre
game.
Brown run for no gain. So the running game wasn't exactly spectacular to start that third quarter, and I'm sure what the Redskins did, they got at the halftime, they're like, oh man, the Giants ran 11 times for 73 yards us in the first half. Well, what are we going to do? We're going to make sure they can't run the ball in half number two. They bring the extra safety into the box, and they say we're going to shut down the run, and they, for the most part, did.
Now, Seven with a T, who chimes in a lot on Twitter, is claiming that there was an empty backfield on one of those third and twos. We'd have to go back and look at the film. I don't recall what the situation was,
could
whether
be right.
or not Manning switched out of it, or he didn't even have the option to run the ball because there was nobody in the backfield.
Could very well be right. We would have to check on that. But again, Eli, even if it's an empty backfield play, Eli can audible out of that, bring a guy back into the
correct.
Backfield and try to make a play, assuming a running back was on the field, which, again, we'd have to look at the personnel to see what it was on that particular play. 201-939-4513. Now we're going to go to Carl. Actually, you know what? Let's go to Victor in Texas. Excuse me. Victor, what's going on? Carlos, you'll be next after Victor. What's up, Victor?
Hey, what's going on, gentlemen? Hey, spirited calls this morning. First off, I'd just like to say I'm glad we won the game. Now, let me get into the real deal. I'm actually watching the game right now, too. I'm actually watching it and analyzing it. First of all, guys, you know we didn't get a first down until 10:50 in the second quarter.
Well, they ran 6 plays for 5 yards in the first quarter. It was
exactly.
very rough.
So I'm just looking at how stagnant our offense and how lethargic it came out. Second of all, you dead on with Will Beatty. I've been slapping that. I've been playing that harp all this year for Will Beatty. He gave up a touchdown. I mean, excuse me. He gave up a sack the first play of the game, and on that Eli Manning interception, guess who pressured him and Arakpo pressured Beattie and was pressuring Eli. Eli stepped up. He doesn't like the rush in his face. So Eli, he throws off his back foot because he wants to get rid of the ball. But that pressure was brought on by Will Beattie's inability to actually block speedy rushes. But then I thought to myself, that it doesn't matter who's speedy or not. Will Beattie just cannot block. He just cannot do it. I mean, he's not a real left tackle. And the run game was kind of lethargic in the beginning as well. But, you know, Andre Brown and Peyton Hillis, they were doing really good running towards David Deal's side. Now, you notice they wasn't running towards Beattie's side.
You're right about that. That's true.
Yeah, that's where all of their runs got. So the yardage came from. I definitely want to see – I think something's wrong with Hakeem Nicks. I mean, I really do. Like you said, John, he's not getting any separation. And all they had to do, they were locking down Victor Cruz because they were sitting on Hakeem Nicks' route. I don't know what's wrong with him. I don't know if it's he's something in his mind, but he's not coming to play. And defensively, you know, Antro Roe is my MVP this year. Antro Roe and Decent, because these guys, both from the U, and these, I mean, we need more U players because they just bring it. I'm telling you right now, the defense didn't show up in the beginning. I think that the hurry-up offense kind of caught them off guard, and it got them really tired, and they were losing that war of attrition early. But I think they actually came back, and they became, you know, they got that team defense going. But Antro Roe and Beeson are always doing their job. I definitely think that Amukamara, I mean, I'm going to start calling him Stone Hands because he just cannot catch an interception that's been being thrown right to him. You know, I'm just looking at him, and he's an all right corner, but he still needs a little bit of work. And defensively up the middle, and I'll be brief. Defensively up the middle, we weren't getting a lot of pressure. And Chris Collinsworth was saying RG3 is looking, he's been able to look around. Yeah, because there's no pressure we generate until late in the game. And Tuck had an awesome game. Tuck reminded me of that 2007 season. He did a great job. And lastly, the punt return, the punt return coverage team. It seems like we are never there in front of a player who's actually running the ball back on us. I mean, I don't know what is going on, but we can't seem to get there. I don't know if it's the players. I don't know if it's the scheme or whatever, but Tom Quinn needs to come up with something. But to me, it just seems like we just don't have the right players, John. And when you talk about execution, I don't believe it's the plays. I mean, you still have to execute regardless of what the play is. So tell me what's going on with that as far as the Giants, and what do you see with us next year, because I'm looking towards next year right now, and what do we need to actually start this all over again? Is it going to be a rebuilding year for us next year?
Hey, look, I don't want to look ahead too much, Victor, but I will say this. Based on the fact that there are so many players on this team that are going to hit free agency, whether it's one-year contracts or longer-term contracts expiring, I think there's going to be a ton of turnover. I think you're going to see probably three or two new offensive linemen. I think you're going to see another new running back in here because of the David Wilson injury and Andre Brown's propensity to get injured as well. I think you're going to see a new tight end in here, despite the fact, and we really haven't mentioned this, Lance, Brandon Myers had its best game as a Giant, and at Giants, Gab brought it up. You know, it took until week 12 for him to actually show up and play a good game, and I think that's fair. I think you're going to see a new tight end. I think right now, my idea to franchise Akeem Nicks for a year, I'm starting to second-guess that plan because he, frankly, is getting worse as the season goes along. He's not getting better. So I think you might see a new wide receiver in here too. And on defense, I think Justin Tuck will probably be back at a good deal, at a good number. You'll probably add a linebacker. I think you'll probably add a cornerback at some point in the offseason, whether it's in the draft or free agency. And then you got to decide what you want to do with tackle. You know, Colin Jenkins will be back, but is Sean Rogers going to retire? Is Linval Joseph going to leave? Is Marcus Kuhn and Hankins ready to take on a bigger role? I think that's something else you have to look at, too.
Hey, the kickoff, the question the guy asked about the kickoff returner. I mean, David Wilson's our most explosive guy.
Right.
I don't think we're going to go out and get one. I think we need to get him back healthy, and that'll help us on the kickoff return.
Good point, Victor. Thanks for the call, buddy.
Now, keep in mind, even if they get him healthy and they see him as a big playmaker in the running game, how much would they necessarily use him on kickoffs? You need to keep that in mind.
Well, I think maybe based on his health, you want to limit him in the running game, and then you can use his explosiveness in the passing game, maybe use a middle-round draft pick on a running back. You mentioned it before the show. Jeff Fisher's finding running backs off the street, and they're running all over the place for the St. Louis Rams. The Giants are picking up Brandon Jacobs with a bad knee, who can't play consecutive games because he's managing his knee injury. I mean,
And sometimes that's more of a reflection of the system in place, how you're just able to plug these guys in,
too.
Not necessarily the talent of the running back, but there are other teams, as you mentioned, John, that seem to take these unknown commodities and turn them into some notable playmakers. And you mentioned Brandon Myers, back-to-back games where all of a sudden I would say he's been fairly productive. He got that touchdown against the Cowboys where Dallas decided not to play defense anymore, but that was a whole other story. He'll take it whenever he can get. And there were times where Myers was untouched off the line of scrimmage last night, and he was running right up the gut. Manning hit him in stride, as Steve from D.C. was saying, has never happened, and he gets right into the end zone. So, you know what? If the Giants wide receivers are not getting separation, Eli Manning has to learn, I just got to go to the open guy, and at least last night he saw Brandon Myers was the open guy.
Hey, look, and I think that's a product of all the attention being given to Victor Cruz, and they're manning up Akeem Nicks, and they're not putting a lot of attention on Brandon Myers, and he had a lot of room to operate in the middle of that field on linebackers, and he took advantage of it, really, and they've been waiting for him to do that, and he finally did it last night.
And we've been discussing and speculating all season long, and perhaps it's just the complexity of the Giants' offensive system, him not being a blocker, that he needed more than half a season just to get on the same page with Eli Manning. And perhaps if he does well in these next four games, John, you wonder, do the Giants maybe change their approach and say he's maybe worth bringing back on a one-year deal?
Maybe, but the issue you have is that he's still not a two-way tight end in terms of the blocking, and
well,
if you're not
going
to be an explosive receiving tight end, I at least want to have you be able to block a little bit.
Well, you mentioned that the Giants are probably going to bring in a new tight end next season. They've got four on the roster. How many new tight ends are they going to turn to?
By the way, and Carlos, we'll get to you in a second. You've been holding since the start of the show. I promise we'll get to you right after this one point. We talked to Pat Hanlon on the pregame show, and all of you guys have been tweeting and calling about Adrian Robinson. So I asked him, Pat, what's the deal with Adrian Robinson? And his basic inference was that he's only practiced for 3 and 4 weeks, and he's not ready to go in terms of understanding what he's doing. That's what I got out of it, Lance. Is that pretty much what you got out of it, too?
I got the same thing. I think you could say it's a combination of the injury that put him behind a little this season. And I get back to him still playing catch-up, John, and maybe I'm building an excuse for him, but, you know, he was behind because Cincinnati's schedule, because of graduation, finished much later. So that put him behind last season. He was playing catch-up all last season, and then the injury this season put him behind, so he's still trying to digest the offense.
Yeah, but he had a full off season. He's in the meeting rooms.
But there is
that.
A difference, and once again, I'm not trying to stretch this out. There's a difference between mental reps versus physical
reps.
That's
fair.
Look at RG3. RG3 missed an entire offseason. There's a reason why he's not the same quarterback.
It's fair. 201-939-4513. Carlos is in Virginia. Carlos, thanks for holding, bud.
Hey, how you doing this morning?
Doing well, Carlos. How was it yourself?
I'm doing all right. It was a big win for the Giants, and I would have to say that the defense, you know, had pulled it off, which I've seen in a lot of games. You know, the defense has been counted on so many of these games that we've won because, you know, the offense has been a little bit shaky, you know. And now looking ahead, you know, to the next remaining games, which is a tough stretch. You know, you're playing with the likes of San Diego and Seattle and Detroit. You know, when it's all said and done, you know, that, you know, it's going to be really hard to climb back up into this race, being that Dallas is undefeated in the division. So, with that being said, you know, after it's all said and done, I mean, because you was talking to another gentleman that was asking about the rebuilding process, but where does it actually begin as far as rebuilding, and how would they do it?
Well, I don't really think they need to approach it as rebuilding. I just think that they need to decide who they want to invest money in and who they want to maybe explore in terms of other options that are not currently on this team, because there's pieces in play where they could be competitive. It's not as if they're in disarray at every single position. They just need to determine, okay, we need an upgrade maybe at tight end. We need to decide who's going to be in the mix at that defensive line spot. We need to determine what the rotation is going to be in the backfield. So it's a matter of looking at the salary cap and saying, where can we get the best bang for our buck? And that's going to be the biggest decisions that they're going to have to make. Because remember, a lot of guys, Carlos, are on one-year contracts that they gave out this offseason. So they're going to have some flexibility, and they're going to have to find the correct balance between upgrading through the draft and also deciding what free agents are out there and who fits within their budget.
Yeah, and I believe I mean, this is just my opinion. I mean, it would have to start with the offensive line because this is the most uncomfortable I've seen Eli play in a very long time since the start of his rookie season. I mean, this is the most uncomfortable I've seen him. I mean, I can look at the expression on his face, and, you know, and especially during the six losses, you know, during the time that they were 0-6, you know, I've never seen him that uncomfortable, you know, during his career.
Well, as you just alluded to, Carlos, he's had the luxury of playing with a veteran offensive line over the last few years that has stayed healthy. Now, all of a sudden, these guys are getting up there in age. They're struck by the injury bug. You need some guys that you could call upon that will step in and help that level of production stay at the same point. And that has not necessarily happened. So they either need to go out, find some free agents that are a little bit younger that they can groom, or finally invest in a draft pick that's going to pan out, because clearly Jerry Reese has looked that way, but these guys have not come to fruition in the last few years.
I would think that it would have to start there because, you know, I mean, because when it comes down to under pressure, and I mean, and I also see it with Peyton Manning, when it comes down to for that, you know, that pressure, you know, it sometimes could get really, really tough.
It can. It could be a major issue. And Carlos, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in this morning.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
You got it.
201-939-4513. Back to the phones. AJ's in South Carolina. AJ, what's up?
Good morning, Jonathan.
Let's go. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. Brandon Myers, he had a good game here last night.
Long time coming.
Bad game. Who the other tight end for him? Because I thought he needed to use a two tight end set.
Bear Pasco.
Bear Pasco. So, do they use the two tight end sets a lot?
Yeah, I mean, I think you see a rotation. You know, you see John Connor in there a lot on rundowns since he's such a good lead blocker at fullback. But you see Pasco step in for him a lot. He plays that H-back role. He, you know, motions in and out of the backfield, and you will have two tight ends on the field from time to time.
I think the Giants, I hope the Giants will sign John Beast because he's been an MVP on the defensive side.
Well, I agree, AJ, and I think you got to make sure he stays healthy these last four games. But if he does, he's made enough plays and has shown the leadership necessary to be the starting Mike linebacker. Of course, there's also a matter of cost, too. How much money is he going to want after having such a strong second half? So those are all things that Giants have to take into consideration.
And they played for Will Hill, and their fumble, that was a good play.
Hey, look, Will Hill's been, and thanks for the call, AJ. We appreciate it. Will Hill's been making big plays for this team all year, and I wasn't as confident in his ability to step in after that suspension this year as everybody else, and I was wrong. He's come in and done an excellent job. Excellent job.
I think there's been multiple guys on this roster, John, this year that have been given second chances, given opportunities, and have embraced them and run away with them. I think Will Hill's one of the guys. John Beeson getting traded from Carolina to the Giants. A lot of people were skeptical that he was never going to get back to full health, never going to get back to Pro Bowl form. He has answered that call. And the third guy is probably Terrell Thomas, who also a lot of people gave up, never thought that he would return to his old self, and after three ACL injuries has bounced back and been very effective in an injury-plagued secondary. So those three guys, no coincidence that that's why this Giants defense has turned things around, because they've gotten consistent production out of those three. And I don't think anybody saw that coming when it came to the start of training camp, because Beeson wasn't clearly on the roster. Thomas was a big question mark. And Will Hill, you knew some off-the-field issues were plaguing and overshadowing his play.
And Jason Forbes goes back to Brandon Myers here on Twitter. As crazy as it sounds, this is me reading what he wrote. We should re-sign Myers. We need to. Chemistry will start to build very dangerous, but then NYG Cap Central makes the point that, look, he has a four-year deal, but if the Giants void the deal, they save something like $3.25 million in the cap next year, because Myers technically signed a four-year contract, but you can easily get out of it after a year. So the Giants aren't going to bring him back at a $3.5 million cap it next year. So, I mean, maybe they'll consider it if they release him and then they renegotiate
something.
But I still think it's unlikely, and Giants Gab agrees that he just isn't, you know, physical or athletic enough to really be what you want at that tight end spot. At least that's what Martellus Bennett gave you last year. He wasn't maybe the most consistent guy, and he still made some mental errors and things like that, but he was physical at the point of the attack, blocking, and even catching the ball. He's 6'6". He's a big guy. He's good in the red zone. So I agree. I think that's more what you're looking for.
But, John, here's another thing you got to weigh. How many more seasons are they going to continue to go with this trend where they bring in a different tight end? Because it's hard to build chemistry between the quarterback, the offensive line, and the tight end if you have these constant movable parts. Remember, they went from Ballard 1 year, Martellus Bennett another year, now Brandon Myers. You do that again, you're talking about four tight ends in the span of 4 years. Now, I understand Giants fans are saying, well, it's all about production at the end of the day, but you can only get to a certain level of production if you have consistency. So that's another thing that I think this organization has to weigh. Do we need to overlook consistency by just going with the big name that will be able to slide right in and we think we're going to get to numbers that will be productive? Or do we say, let's buy ourselves some more time. Myers has been productive over the last few games. This is something we can build upon with another full offseason, and then we can help him adjust to becoming a consistent blocker.
All right. Are you prepared?
I am prepared.
You're ready?
I'm ready.
You're set?
Oh, boy.
All right. Vinny in Pennsylvania. Vinny, go.
Oh, man, that set me up for a rap. Oh, man, I was just calling in to chime in today, though. Is that
John's
right?
Disappointed now.
That's all right, Vinny.
Hands are up. Vinny, we're going to cut you off. That's it. It's over.
I was trying to give Lance a chance to redeem himself for not finishing your rhyme last week.
All right, I'll tell you like this. I'm going to make a promise. I'm going to say it like this. I got a call from my dad last night. He was kind of pumped because, you know, we won 5 out of the last 6. So
right.
I'm interested to see what we do in the next 3 games. So, listen, if we can beat, I promise that I will have at least up to the Dallas Cowboys caliber rap. Because I actually say I went back and listened to it. I liked it. And that was a great show you guys had. And I will definitely deliver a nice rhyme if we can pull off at least beating the Chargers. But if we beat the Seahawks, then I think I'm going to really step it up and come with something special. And then I'll prep Lance so we can nail it live on the air.
All right. Sounds like a plan, Vinny.
We'll go through a seminar. We'll have training. We'll have a few days to get ready for the show. I like that.
Hey, you know what? While we're on this, I actually had a meeting last night with radio station, and in January I'll have my own radio show on WFNM, so that's pretty cool. Either
nice.
You're a professor at the college, or you're a student, which is a waste. You know, that you really don't get your own show, but just from the reputation I made around the area, I actually got the show, so I'm pretty pumped. So Lance, John, one of you has to call in one time at least, and it's not sports, of course. It's all about, you know, my record collecting deal. But all right, let me jump into it real quick. I know you got a lot of callers, so I just want to bees in last night, that early hit on RG that knocked him back 3 yards, great hit. I think it really set a tone. RG was gonna looking downfield for a run. Beeson, Nate, he just saw Beeson coming, he laid down. I
yep.
loved it. An overlooked player of the game in my eyes that really kept us in it was Weatherford. I haven't heard many people talk about him. I think he had 6 or 7 punts. Most of them were behind our own 20. I think he had a 60-yard punt, kept it down the side of the field mostly. I don't know. I thought he looked great. So that's really about it. I mean, I got to give it up for Coughlin holding this team together. And I guess the last thing I'll leave that I'd like to hear a comment about was the end of the game with the down situation. I kind of blame it on the Skins because, hey, you want to play this crazy hurry-up offense before the refs can really even set the ball into place. But I don't know. I want to hear your thoughts on the end of the game. But thanks, guys. Like I said, I'll stay true to the rhyme. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks, man. Hey, look, honestly, I understand why Shanahan was upset. I understand why the Redskins were mad. Because if you have a 3rd and 1, you just run the ball to get the first down there. Instead, they're trying to throw a pass down the field. That should have been caught. I think that was actually a drop pass on that play.
Fred Davis.
Yeah, I think Fred Davis actually had caught like a 25-yard post.
Correct.
And then he was bobbling at a roll, separating
him
from the football. Exactly. But if I'm the Redskins, I'm mad. Because he asked one of the line judges, and he saw the chains move, and then they were told that, look, it's a first down. Okay, I'm going to run this play now. And your whole strategy changes if it's 3rd and 1 as opposed to 1st and 10 in an end-of-game scenario like that. So, look, that's a bad job by the officiating crew. And the Redskins got bad information, and quite frankly, it probably cost them. But that's the way it goes.
Been a lot of miscues with the officials throughout the course of this season. That's been a big trend throughout the NFL. But I think it gets back to what Vinny said. I think everybody shares some responsibility. Part of it is the Redskins realizing, okay, let's see what is out on the field right now and what we're dealing with, as opposed to worrying about getting the Giants defense caught off guard and the officials being on top of things,
I mean,
too.
It's a 2-minute drill.
You have a minute 30 seconds to score a touchdown. You can't wait and say, let's waste time and make sure the officials have their act together here, guys. They asked the officials if it was a first down, and they were told yes. But what else do you want them to do?
Well, I get back to at least the big picture perspective. In hindsight, Pierre Garçon winds up fumbling the football. If, you know, they would have gotten in a position where they could have got the game-tying score, then we could really take this to a whole other degree. Well, but they had time and opportunities to execute, and they didn't come to
And
it.
Pierre Garçon had a drop on the second and one on the play before that when he tried to reach back and catch the ball. So, look, the Redskins certainly didn't help themselves, but needless to say, the officials need to do a better job than that and be on the same page and inform the Redskins what the down and distance is. If that happened to the Giants, we'd be getting nothing but phone calls killing the refs this morning. The whole morning. That's all we'd be getting. And I'm not saying it changed the outcome of the game. I don't think it did. I don't think the Redskins are scoring a touchdown or probably a field goal in that spot anyway, the way they played offense that entire second half and the way the Giants defense shut them down. But that is still a bad job by the officials. And quite frankly, with the speed in which a lot of these games run now, I'm surprised that doesn't happen more often. But you got to do better. That's all I'm saying.
Jeff Triplett, the official who was in charge of the group last night, explained to the Washington Times, I'm now reading, why all of a sudden things broke down. And he said, quote, "We signaled third down on the field. The stakes were moved incorrectly after that play. We said it was still third down. We had signaled third down prior to the play starting. The stakes just got moved incorrectly," end quote. So he's claiming there was a miscue between, obviously, the officials and the guys on the sideline. I'm sure the league is going to look into it. And Triplett doesn't necessarily have the best track record during the course of his career, but that's a whole other issue. This has been happening more often than not. It's unfortunate. You don't like to see these type of things play out when the game is on the line because you want the players to dictate the tone and the outcome of the game, not necessarily the officials. But it's human error, and that, unfortunately, is an element of the game that everybody's got to deal with.
Let's go to Bruce in East Orange. Bruce, good morning.
Bruce, you got to turn down your computer there. We're getting some feedback. Bruce, are you there?
All right, let's
Hello, yes, I'm sure I am. How you doing?
Yeah, go ahead, Bruce.
Fellas, I like to give a big up to the Giants for a great win last night. I was very, very happy to see the Giants step up and play good, solid football. I basically have one question about the Giants and where they're going right now.
Sure.
As far as the future and what they need to do, do the Giants have like the money and the way to make the moves they need to make as far as Knicks is concerned and maybe keeping Myers and all things that you think they need to do in the future? How are we set there?
Well, they're going to have some more financial flexibility because, as we've been saying, a lot of guys were brought in this season on one-year deals. But just because you have the financial flexibility doesn't mean, Bruce, that you just shell out the money. You have to be wise. Uh-huh. So they're going to have to determine, is Hakeem Nicks worth a long-term deal? Is he even worth the franchise tag? Which, remember, franchise tag is the average of the top five salaries at that position.
I thought it was top 10.
The league. It's top 10.
I thought the first year you got franchised, it was top 10. And then if you got franchised the second year, it jumped to top 5. It's going
to
be somewhere around $10 or $1 million for a year.
Correct.
Bottom line.
So do they want to all of a sudden throw that type of money at Knicks where they could maybe spread the wealth and help upgrade other positions? So to answer your question, they're going to have some room for flexibility, but it really is going to come down to the decision-making in terms of how to spread that money around.
All right. Well, we're going to keep our fingers crossed and hope the right moves are made. But like you guys said before, I don't think, right even now, I don't think the Giants are that far away. I think there's a few pieces here, there they need to change. But, you go with the blue, you like the blue, you just keep it moving. I'm happy for them. I hope they keep going as far as they're going.
Thanks, Bruce.
All right now.
Appreciate it.
Bruce.
Now, here's a race. Who's going to find out this information first? Will it be Lance Meadow or NYG Cap Central on Twitter? I have my bet on NYG Cap Central.
Well, remember, there's two types of franchise tags. There's the exclusive and non-exclusive. The exclusive franchise tag, I have to offer a player a one-year contract for an amount no less than the average of the top five salaries at the player's position.
But that player,
as of April,
cannot even sign an offer sheet with anybody. Isn't that correct if he's an exclusive
rights-free agent?
Got it. But if he's a regular franchise player, which
non-exclusive,
then a team would have to give up a number one draft pick if they signed him, correct? Then it's a top 10?
But he must be offered a one-year contract for an amount no less than the average of the top five salaries at the player's position.
So maybe top 10 is the transition tag. You know, they added that in recent years where you can put the transition tag on somebody. Maybe that's the top 10 salary.
It's amazing.
Is that right?
Well, you do some homework.
Is that correct?
Yeah, you connect the dots. Transitional tag player. That is a minimum of the average of the top 10 salaries.
I knew the top 10 was in there somewhere, but you were right.
To a certain degree.
No, you were right, though.
We'll give you half a pat on the back there. So that is a little history lesson in terms of the ins and outs of the collective bargaining agreement.
Now, what's the rule with the transition tag again? If they put the transition tag on somebody, what kind of compensation do they get from another team if they slap the transition tag on somebody?
Transition player designation gives the club a first refusal right to match within 7 days an offer sheet given to the player by another club after his contract expires. If the club matches, it retains the player. If it does not match, it receives no compensation.
Oh, okay, but you get a right to match. But correct. The team that offers the guy the contract doesn't have to give any compensation if they sign him.
So you don't get a draft pick. Whereas with the franchise situation, then you would get some type of compensation.
That's almost like a mini franchise tag. You have the mini franchise tag, the regular franchise tag, and then the exclusive right franchise tag.
Three different options.
So there's some salary cap X's and O's for you folks out there. 201-939-4513. This guy's been working on his X's and O's all night. I'm not sure if he's out on this porch. It might be a little too chilly. But and by the way, Lennon Merrillin called the video call-in show we did on Friday. Word has it he tried to get a satellite truck down there to actually get on screen to talk to us live in person, but the weather prevented the satellite truck from getting there.
So Len waits till Paul DeTito hosts with you to call in.
Yeah, that's
We've
correct.
Been hosting for weeks on Fridays. I never heard a phone call.
That's
from
a fair
him.
Point.
Thanks, Len. Appreciate that.
Okay. That was actually kind of different to turn on my computer and see John and Paul DeTino sitting there in front of me. It was okay. I hope you get to do that again sometime.
Well, and Len, every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, Big Blue Hits is our video show. It's on at 4 o'clock, and we take calls.
Yes.
So if you want to call in anytime, please feel free.
Yes. Oh, but, guys, it can't match the morning show. This is really a great show.
I agree. I think this show is fantastic.
It is really terrific. And, of course, the call. You guys do a good job, but the callers make the difference.
No question about it.
That goes without
saying. Callers do a fantastic job, no doubt about it.
And the Bruno Mars wristband, that takes it to a whole other level.
Listen, I'm pulling it out of my memorabilia box. I may put it back on again.
No, don't put it back on. They just won a game, Len. Don't mess this up.
There you go. That's the thinking I've got to adopt. Very good. Listen, nothing like winning a game against a division rival on the road. The only thing better than that is being there. It was a great show last night. A great shout-out to Giants fans. Boy, there were a lot of Giants fans there last night. I know it probably came through on TV, but you know to be part of that, geez, there was just a lot of blue in the stands. It was really terrific. And, a great win. And, look, 25% of the season left. Let's just keep winning games. You know, next year will take care of itself. We can worry about that up in January. But, I just want to, worry about San Diego and, just keep winning. And a couple of other comments. Terrible job by the refs. I mean, just terrible job there at the end by the refs. But, guys, when we get the regular refs back, things will change. Oh, those were the regular refs. How about that? How about that? Anybody can make mistakes, but that was horrendous last night. I think Pat was right. I think he simplified it with Adrian Robinson. He's not doing the things that they're asking Larry Donnell to do better than Larry Donnell can do them. I mean, the guy's just behind. There's no role right now. He's just the fourth guy. He's on the roster, and at least he can sit in meetings. If we had IR'd him, at least he wouldn't have the benefit of being around the coaches and of being around the other players and, maybe learning some stuff. But this is going to sound funny coming from an educator. But, if you graduate from the University of Cincinnati or about to graduate and you get a job offer from Procter & Gamble as part of one of their product management teams, and they're going to pay you $55,000 a year, they'll probably let you finish your degree. But, again, sounds funny coming from an educator, but put the math book aside for a couple of months, Adrian, and report on time. I think you guys brought something up. This guy was behind right from the start. He should have been here. The guy was going to make millions.
No, you know what, Len? I don't think that's Adrian Robinson's choice. I think that's NFL rules, where if that semester he has in college isn't done yet, he's still technically a college student,
And he's not allowed to come here and participate in those OTAs until his working college is done. I believe that's a rule. I don't think that's a choice.
Hey, you know what? That's a good point. And I gotta hand it to you. I had forgotten that. And you may actually – well, I don't think you're actually right. I think you are right on that. So I'm sorry I brought that up. But, hey, listen, you know, a lot of times if you overanalyze, you know, you get into paralysis. You know, it's paralysis through analysis. The play calling is what it is because that's what the play calling has to be. I mean, we're looking at, you guys mentioned it earlier, we're looking at a maximum, you know, 21, 24 points a game. How do we get to 24 points and count on the defense to hold the other team to less than that? The play calling's okay. It's what it has to be at this time. And, you know, especially on the offensive side. On the defensive side, just keep emphasizing stopping the run. Just make that the main goal. Stop the run this year. Stop the run. Maybe we can sneak out a couple of other wins. You know, big win by the Giants. I feel good about it, particularly like Larry from D.C., living down in this area. It's going to take the pressure off this week. Hey, thanks for taking my calls, and thanks for the correction on my point. And we'll talk again. Thank you.
I appreciate it, Len. Thanks so much. I guess Len is a retired educator. I think next time we need to get into his educational background a little bit.
We may need to get into that. We've discussed the family. We've discussed the rocking chair. We've discussed the musical instruments that he enjoys.
That's right.
Personalities that he enjoys. So we need to
love of stars as well.
Correct.
Big J-Lo fan.
We like to hear a little bit about our listeners. We like to be well-balanced and well-rounded.
Well, next time he calls up, let's play a little game here. Let's take a guess. At what level and what subject did Len in Maryland teach? What do you think?
Whether it be elementary, high school, college.
And then subject. I'm guessing he was a history teacher. I'm going to go history. English I considered, but I'm going to go history instead
of English.
I
like history. I would go with that.
You agree with me?
Many historical references
on
the show.
So we'll go history, and I think English is a second choice. Now, I believe Len, with his no-nonsense attitude, I'm going to psychoanalyze here. I think Len taught, what do you think, middle school or high school? I'm on the fence.
I think high school.
You know, high school?
And I think it was American history, by the way. We should
No,
specify.
I agree with that. All right.
Okay.
American history teacher
definitely
in
American
high school.
History.
All right, I'm with
Not
you
that
on
he
that.
Doesn't know his European history, but I could definitely see it being more American history.
All right. Next time he calls up, we're going to have to see if we're right about that. 201-939-4513. Mo Manning is in Montclair, New Jersey. Mo, what's going on, pal?
Hey, good morning, guys. I just hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving.
Same to you.
All right. And, yeah, like the last caller said, that was a huge win. But, guys, you have to explain to me about Will Beatty's play. I mean, he's looking bad out there. He's looking very bad. And I'm not sure if he was worth all the money we threw at him, but he just needs to get his performance back intact. And my other thing, I'm going to be very quick today, is do you think we can get Nick's, like, involved early with some one-on-one back shoulder passes, some curls, a few slants, just to get his engine going? Because not hearing his name and not hearing Hakeem Nicks, like, he's, like, one of my favorite receivers, and he's been since he came here, is tough. And I think that Nicks is definitely still a great player, and he has something in the tank. And also, another point I'd just like to add, do you think if we cut David Boss that we can keep Booth at center and probably find another guy to fill in for his old position?
I think that's an option. I think the Giants believe Kevin Booth is just as good of a center as he is a guard. So if they hit the free agent market and they say, well, look, we see a guard that we like a lot more than the centers out there, leaving Booth at center if they decide not to bring back David Boss. And, again, I think that's probably unlikely based on the size of his salary next year. They can always renegotiate, give him a cut. We'll see. But, yeah, I think Booth gives him valuable flexibility to play guard or center and be confident with him in either spot. However, there is also the option, if you don't think Booth is starting caliber, remember, they played horrible with him this year. They only gave him basically a veteran minimum type of deal to get him back this year. Maybe they like him as more of a swing tackle to play guard and center. So I think that's something you have to look at as you move forward here. And the Giants decide exactly how much they want to spend and how much they want to try to upgrade that offensive line.
Okay, definitely. And if you guys could just talk about Beatty and getting Nicks involved early, that's about all I have today.
All right, Mo, appreciate the phone call. In terms of getting Akeem Nicks involved very early, I think it goes back to what John touched on earlier in the show. It all comes down to his separation. Listen, Manning could throw to him 100 times in the first quarter. If he's not getting the separation, Mo, at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter how many times they target him.
Did you see the graphic NBC put up there in the first quarter of the game? Eli Manning's passer rating when targeting Akeem Nicks over his career. It was a very interesting stat, and it's, frankly, consistently gone down. It was something like 100, 190, then 70 last year, and in the 60s this year. So Eli Manning's numbers and passing rating when targeting Akeem Nicks have simply gotten worse and worse as his career has gone along.
79 targets to Akeem Nicks this season, 44 receptions, 654 yards. And that's the most receptions and yards for any wide receiver without a touchdown this season.
You cannot wait for that stat to be broken, Ken. You've been throwing that thing
out there
for a while.
Well, it's a notable stat.
Seven with a T points out, by the way. I think he's right. Didn't Len mention being a math teacher at some point?
I mean, listen, Len's mentioned so much on this show, it's hard to remember. I give Seven with a T credit if he picked up on that.
201-939-4513. Three more calls on the line before we say sayonara. We're going to say hello to Andrew in Stanhope, New Jersey. Do we have Andrew Jr. and Sr.
with
us today?
The tag team.
I guess you're right. It's either math or history, and I'm interested to find out. Another caller, Victor, was talking about the kickoff returners for the Giants not being good. But Washington, their center, 320-pound center, he's a better kick returner than Jernigan. Remember that? He took that short kick. It was like a squib kick or something,
yep.
And the big center plays special teams, and he rumbled forward with it. But I don't know if you remember that play.
Which one are you talking about? Jernigan in which game? This last game?
Yeah, no, it was just a failed joke on my attempt, but the big Washington center plays special teams on the line, and it was a short kick.
The big guy
rumbled with it, but he's better than Jernigan. No, I actually like Jernigan because he's sure-handed, and everyone's complaining about the third and twos, and I agree. And the very first one, it was an empty backfield, so Eli can't even audible out of it, and that means – Beatty, I could tie in the two comments. People are talking about Beatty. And if you had a running back in the backfield, even if you throw the ball, he could chip and hit Arakpo and then go out for a swing pass, or he could double. They could just double Arakpo. So to put Eli back there with no running back to protect him, with Will Beatty getting beat, and there's no guessing that is it going to be a run or a pass, and Arakpo knows it's going to be a run, and Eli has to rush the throw. So the first one was the worst of all because it was an empty backfield. The next one, the fullback, was back there, which theoretically they can hand the ball to him, but it's not as likely. So I just thought on those third and shorts, they should have at least had a running back there and ran more. And last week against Dallas, all the commentators were complaining that it was third and short and they were throwing deep passes in the wind. And I agreed with the criticism, but that wasn't at the top of my list last week with all the turnovers and penalties. But Hillis, too, he should have played more because I think Andre Brown was injured a little bit, and he looked like he wasn't 100%.
Hey, look,
so Hillis should have played more in the fourth quarter. But I'm happy that they won. It was bittersweet because then it makes you think about the Dallas game if they would have won. And also the eerie thing was Washington, they lost, and it reminded me of the Giants that they had flashes. They look good but inconsistent, turnovers, penalties, special teams, blunders. So it was weird watching the Redskins. It, like, mirrored some of the Giant losses. But I think next year the offensive line will be upgraded and, you know, we'll be rolling. Thanks. But the third and twos, if you could comment, the first one was an empty backfield, and I just thought that was insane play calling. Thanks, guys.
Let the old man say something before you comment. You know who I feel sad for? Bear Pasco. They got two good fullbacks coming up between Harnoski and the guy they got now. Good
John
blockers.
Cotter. Yes.
So he's done because he's just a journeyman tight end. And I always liked the guy. It's just a shame that, you know, any comments?
Well, in terms of the makeup of next year's roster, it's really too early to speculate as to what type of role Bear Pascoe will have moving forward. I think he's been the most reliable blocking tight end, at least on this roster in the last few years, and that's a big reason why they've kept him around. Plus, as you alluded to, he can go back to fullback, and they didn't have John Connor at the start of the season, and Hynoski was hurt.
Well, that's the beauty of Bear Pascoe. He can back up two positions for you. You never want to carry a second fullback, so that's where Pascoe's value is. I think he's solid at everything he does. He's a good pass receiver. He's a good blocker at the line of scrimmage. He's solid. You know, you know what you're going to get out of him.
Bear Pascoe's the equivalent of a Kevin Booth.
Right.
Would you not agree? I mean, in terms of a guy that you can use in different positions.
And I didn't clearly say it, but NYG Cap Central points out, which obviously is a fact, that Booth is a free agent this season, too. So the Giants will have to make a decision on him. That's obviously true. I just didn't mention it at the time.
Well, we were going back and forth with Victor on Twitter, and he had mentioned that because of Booth's versatility, you have to wonder how much money is he going to demand. Because, listen, if you're a team that needs an offensive lineman, John, and I'm not saying Kevin Booth is a big name, but he's a guy that, you know, can fill in at guard, fill in at center. If you need or you have issues at both of those spots, you've got to at least toy with the idea of maybe bringing him in for a visit.
Hey, look, every team struggles with injuries on the offensive line. I would love to have Kevin Booth on my football team as an interior offensive lineman that can swing left, right, or center. He's so valuable in that way. Now, is he a guy that's consistently going to play on a, you know, all NFL first team level? No, probably not. He's not physically gifted enough to do that. But the guy always knows his assignments. He can play multiple positions. He's very flexible. So those guys to me are invaluable. And he's the type of glue guy on this team that really makes a difference going forward.
And I don't want to make generalizations that just because he went to an Ivy League school, it automatically translates to the football field. But you could just tell with the way he conducts himself, John, the way he speaks, very articulate,
true professional,
very thoughtful guy.
True professional, no doubt about it. And you talk to some of the – like I do that spot with Sean O'Hara. He has nothing but great things to say about Kevin Booth.
And this is a guy that was drafted by the Raiders, waived after one season, picked up by the Giants, got another second chance opportunity, and has just taken full advantage of it because of the multiple injuries. Now, before we get back to the topics at hand, I just want to say, a little disappointed between the execution of Andrew Jr. and Andrew Sr. Normally, Andrew Jr. perfectly sets up Andrew Sr. This was maybe a little botched routine there. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I do a little bit. And I feel like Andrew Jr. had like a script prepared today.
Correct.
Like he just wanted to get into the script and get going. He wrote in the little joke that completely went over both of our heads.
Oh, boy, did it ever.
Just confused the hell out of both of us. You've just seen the confused looks on our faces as we tried to figure out what the heck he was talking about.
Well, because we asked, is it the dynamic tag team going? And he just
went right over us. Yeah.
Did not even bother to answer the question. I mean, Andrew Jr.'s got to do a better job with that. Now, he did pose the last comment about the third and twos, and I think we went over that in great detail, but he did say that no one in the backfield on one play and just a fullback on the other, so that at least adds to the conversation as to what type of options Eli Manning had to work with on that.
Fair point. Fair point. Look, I'm not saying you don't want to make run an issue there. Maybe you can run some play action there to get the linebackers up. But again, I can't go nuts on a play when they had Victor Cruz, which for what should have been a touchdown if they just execute the play better. I can't get too mad about that. And I understand the point. I understand the concept. And I, in principle, I don't disagree with it. But when you call a play and you see something, and I'm sure Kevin Gobry and Eli Manning saw stuff during the week watching tape that in third and short, the Redskins can be vulnerable to a certain type of play. They went to take advantage of it. They had the play there to be made, and they just didn't make it.
And I'm fine with your philosophy, but I'm coming from the perspective, at least give the defense the taste that you may run the football.
That's
fair. If you clean out the backfield, John, they're going to only anticipate the pass because they know Eli Manning's not going to scramble in that situation.
Unless Ann in D.C. is calling the plays.
That's fair enough. Can't overlook Ann from D.C. and her play calling, clearly. Now,
and that's fair. I can't disagree with that concept. And then one other thing, we've been going back and forth on Twitter with a couple folks on this as well in regards to Will Beatty's poor play, which you mentioned at the top of the show. And boy, he did really struggle. And a lot of people are throwing out maybe a position change, move him to guard, move him to right tackle. Well, here's the problem. You're paying him left tackle money. If you put him at right tackle, where are you getting your left tackle? Then you're paying 2 year tackles, you know, $7-8 million a year, salary cap wise. That's probably not going to work out too well. Go ask the Dallas Cowboys if they enjoy paying Doug Free $8 million to play right tackle. Let me tell you, they don't.
Well, that's all why some of these decisions are going to have to come down to money, John.
Exactly. And I don't think Will Beatty has the body type or the physicality necessary to play guard. So I think you're looking at him at left tackle. Look, you invested a lot of money in Will Beatty.
You gave him a lot of guaranteed money. He's your left tackle, folks, for better or worse. Deal with it. He's going to have to play better. But now maybe could they move him to the right side and, you know, draft the starting left tackle in the first round if they really like somebody and move Pugh inside? Yeah, that's a possibility, I suppose. But you're not going to go out there and in free agency spend big money on another tackle after you drafted a right tackle in the first round last year and you gave Will Beatty $7, $8 million a year. You're not investing more resources in another tackle.
Here's another idea. What about switching tackles? Because Pugh, remember, played on the left side in college.
That's asking a lot. You could try it. I mean, if you think Pugh can do a better job based on what the coaches have seen in practice, you could think about it. I don't think I've seen enough in games to think that Pugh can go in there and be a shutdown left tackle next year.
I think he's handled himself very well.
And he's improved over the course of the
Correct.
Year, too, which is what you really like to
but
see.
But you wonder, is he ready to perhaps protect Eli Manning's blind side? Maybe in two seasons. I don't know necessarily if another offseason is going
to
do the trick.
And if you folks want to see that graphic we mentioned, by the way, go to hashtag Giants Chat. One of our great tweeters and listeners at Giants Gab put it up there. The passer rating by season, Eli Manning to Akeem Nicks in his rookie year, 112.3. In 2010, 93.6. Slightly down to 92.1 in the Super Bowl year. Then last year with Akeem Nicks dealing with those knee injuries, down to 72.6. And then this year, just terrible at 64.9. So as Akeem Nicks has gotten more and more banged up over the course of his young career, the numbers with Eli Manning have certainly decreased.
That is some graphic.
Isn't it? That's a great job by NBC.
That tells the whole story regarding Akeem Nicks.
Ricky Diamond, the producer over there, doing an excellent job.
Did you do some homework on that? Because I didn't see that name on the graphic.
No, Ricky Diamond, he does our pregame show. He does our preseason games, and he also works on the NBC national broadcast, from what I understand.
Wow, rare that you actually compliment somebody else, but we'll take it in these rare circumstances.
Well, you know, oftentimes the producers of programs get underappreciated. They aren't given the credit that they're due with all the hard work behind the scenes.
I wonder who you're talking about.
I just think sometimes it's
true.
It's nice to talk
the
about the little people.
The sacrifices that some people make each and every
Vast
week.
Sacrifices. It's true. 201-939-4513. I think those people should be recognized sometimes for their greatness.
I also think we have some more calls to
Let's
get to.
Let's go to Ed in Houston, Texas. Ed, good morning. What's going on, buddy?
Ed, are you there?
Last Wednesday.
Yes.
Just fine. Monday morning, right?
Yeah.
I was the last call to come in. I think it was last Tuesday or Wednesday. And the whole time I was waiting, I thought, I hope Ann in D.C. isn't right ahead of me.
No.
She was. And, of course, you guys were hanging from the ceiling at that point. That's what I walked into. I guess she gave us the day off today. But the guy I wanted to talk to, there wasn't anything on the Big Blue Interactive site about him this morning, which typically means he did okay. And that's James Brewer. The only time that guy gets on the field is if he's subbing for somebody when they get hurt. And
right.
Whether he plays well or not, the following week he's back on the bench. And I think it may have been the Kansas City game. It was one of you guys commented and said he held his own and he played pretty well. But with the injury to Cordell and with Booth having to slide to center, they put Brewer in, and he knows he's going to be the starter for the last 5 weeks of the season. And I think it would be interesting to see that he has a golden opportunity to grow each week, and maybe they'll have a left guard there come next year that they didn't know. What do you think?
Well, Brewer has had his ups and downs, I think, throughout the course of his career. I think people expected him to be farther along heading into this season, given some of the injuries that they've had to deal with the last 2 years. But I think he's taken full advantage of his opportunities, as you have alluded to. I think it really comes down to a numbers game. If they bring in some free agents who are offensive linemen and they perhaps draft somebody else, you know, there's going to be more competition that comes in. Remember, they had a number of offensive linemen in training camp. They couldn't keep everybody. So Brewer could be that last guy on the border depending on the competition that comes in. But I think now he's at least put more on tape for them to step back and evaluate him as opposed to the previous two seasons where they really didn't have a lot to work with.
And look, the whole point last night, Ed, you didn't hear his name mentioned a whole lot, which is always a good thing for an offensive lineman. I saw them run some twists and some tricks on that side that did throw him for a loop from time to time that allowed some pressure on blitzes to get through, things like that. But for the most part, he wasn't exposed, and I think that's a good sign. Remember, too, James Brewer, there are going to be opportunities for people to win offensive line jobs at guard next year. I'm sure he wants to be considered in the mix for those spots in 2014. If he wants to be, let's see it these final four games.
Okay, great. Thanks for your feedback, guys. Have a good day.
Hey, you thanks, Ed. Always thanks appreciate so you calling. We love Ed down in Houston, Texas. As the guy with the boat, right?
If I remember
right.
I believe so.
Yes.
Correct.
And NYG Cap Central brings up a good point. He goes, and I said this as well, the Giants could draft a big left tackle in the first round and then move Beattie to the right side and move Pugh inside. I think that's the only way you can add a tackle is through the draft, because you can't go out there and spend big money on one in free agency, because tackles generally will get paid a lot more than guards, for example. You can go out there and get a very good guard and pay him $3.5-4 million a year, which is a substantial investment, but it's not, you know, a $9 million a year contract for a Pro Bowl caliber left tackle. So the only way to me to give support at the tackle position is by doing it through the draft. Move Pugh inside, which I think he'll be very good at. He's very good moving and pulling. I think he'd be very adept at that. And then you put Beattie on the right side. If you don't think he can get the job done at left tackle, that's the only way you can do it. You cannot go out there and spend big money on another tackle. It simply won't work in terms of the cap.
It wouldn't be cost-effective either, because you have other areas that you want to upgrade and improve where you're going to need to spend some big bucks. So, therefore, to have two left tackles on the payroll that are demanding high money just is not practical. So, I could see that as one possibility. Plus, remember, you know, they may want to go out and spend some money on a guard or a center, depending on what happens with Kevin Booth.
201-939-4513. Jesse is in Maryland. Jesse, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How you all doing today? Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Jesse. What's up?
Hey, look, in regards to Hakeem Nicks, you know, when the Giants drafted him, I immediately thought that he could be somewhat of a Anquan Boldin or Andre Johnson, just a tough, strong receiver that is usually covered, but when the ball's thrown to him, would usually catch it. And he did have a good catch yesterday that where he was just smothered by the defender, but there was just one drive in the fourth quarter, and there was it was 3rd and 6, and Eli threw it to Reuben Randall for a 3-yard gain. But on that specific play, Hakeem Nicks was 1-on-1, and he didn't even look at Hakeem Nicks. And it was just a major concern, because I was at the game last night, and by the way, it was great seeing the sea of blue at FedEx Field. You know, it's always great to see Giants fans come out, but you know, it's just amazing to me how Hakeem Nicks, I think we all know that he could be a top-5 receiver, and even if he's not getting separation, he's, in my opinion, still strong enough with the strong hands to catch the ball if it's thrown in his area. Now, I can understand double teams and stuff like that, but on one-on-one, I mean, I would think it's a given that Eli would go to him. Just like, you know, I mean, he went to Victor Cruz quite a few times last night, which is great to see Cruz, you know, but I'm just kind of tired of seeing the Giants offense not capitalizing on weaker defenses. I mean, and, you know, kind of going back to last week, you know, it should have never been in the defense's hand to close out the game against Dallas. I think, you know, the Giants offense should have put up a little more points. I know that the defense kind of faltered at the end, but there were some injuries. But, I mean, even, you know, yesterday, you know, the defense had to kind of close it out. And I just, it's kind of sad that we know that the Giants have a high-powered offense, or can be a high-powered offense and have been, but they haven't shown it this year, you know, and I think that it's just kind of, you know, it was great to see Justin Tuck, you know, play the way he played yesterday, you know, and he had gave a big shout-out to Matthias Kiwanuka as far as him playing every defensive snap. You know, we need to continue to have players like that on this team so that we can move forward positively, you know, and that's pretty much what I wanted to say. Thank you for taking my call.
All right, Jesse, thanks for the call, and I think one point you bring up is it's a really good one, and Lance, it's the first thing he said to me when he walked in the door this morning. And, Jesse, you mentioned the issues on offense and simply not being that explosive offense and needing to be. And Lance said to me as soon as I walked in, John, the Giants still haven't played a complete game this season. And he's 100% right. You're still missing something. And I think, you know, when you have a team that's not going to make the playoffs, or at this point likely not going to make the playoffs, let's not bury them before they're actually dead, this is what you see. You see a team that can't take advantage of certain opportunities, that can't consistently put points up on the board when you need them. And when one aspect of the team is playing extremely well, something tends to happen with another aspect that drags the team down.
Well, I think Giants fans are having a hard time getting used to what this offense is all about this season. And even the two of us, we're so used to seeing every game in years past, John, where Victor Cruz gets that 60 to 70 yard touchdown pass. And I know he had that against Kansas City, but we haven't seen anything since. Or Ruben Randall gets the big play. Maybe they get a big play to a tight end or a big running play. And we've seen a flash here or a flash there, but this has been a very slow paced, ground heavy offense, and it's the evolution of this offense that we're watching this season, which is something that we haven't had to view in years past. And that's been an adjustment period for not just the team, but also the fan base. And it's something just doesn't feel right.
Every pregame show we've had on the radio, I feel like we've said, oh, well, the Cowboys are giving up 400-yard passers. This is the week this Giants offense explodes. The second week, the Panthers are missing their top three quarterbacks. This is the week the Giants offense takes over. Oh, the Raiders are missing two out of the three top cornerbacks. The Packers are missing two out of three top cornerbacks. They're the 28th-ranked pass defense, the 30th-ranked pass defense, either the Vikings, the 32nd-ranked pass defense, or the Cowboys. This is the week Eli Manning and this passing game erupt. And I will quote Paul Dottino, as much as it pains me,
oh,
it's like a volcano with no lava. You're sitting there waiting for it to erupt, and there's just nothing there.
I got to give him credit. That's actually a pretty good line, to a certain degree.
We actually had that discussion before the pregame show, and we kind of developed that together.
Oh, okay. So then let's not give him full credit solely for.
I'm trying to remember the conversation. I think I mentioned the offense being dormant, and then he related that, and he made the volcano analogy himself.
I'm just happy that you guys are working together so nicely.
We're having our production meetings.
That's very nice.
You had your production meeting back in the shop with Feagles. You guys bash us. Paul and I discuss things on the road, and we bash you. It's always fun.
Good. Listen, hey, it works out nicely in the end. That's all that matters. By the way, did you really notice that Dottino changed his Twitter picture, or did I alert to
No, I had no idea. In fact, I still haven't looked at it.
You need to check that out. He's in the act of being a quarterback, which is truly amazing, since Paul Dottino, I'm sure, has had big dreams of grandeur in putting on those white pants and running out and doing his magic on the football field.
I'm just happy they took the shot before he actually started his throwing motion, because it gets ugly.
Well, that's why I said on the pregame show, that's exactly what a quarterback is thinking before he throws an interception. So when you look at that picture, everybody on Twitter, I just want you to realize that's exactly what a quarterback goes through.
Or this is the second before he gets blindside sacked by Anita Marks?
No. Oh, well, that could be a pot. The strip sack, is that what we're going to reference it?
Well, I see you as more of a strip sack guy from behind. I think Anita would just bury him right in the turf.
I do not want to picture that, but anything's possible.
201-939-4513. Donnie's in Florida. He's our final call of the show. Donnie, good morning. How are you, pal?
Good morning. How are you?
We're doing great, Don.
I'm a big diehard Giants fan. I think they played a hell of a game last night. The defense played outstanding. I just think they got to start getting Eli Manning and Hakeem Nicks back on track together.
I wouldn't hold your breath, Donnie. They've been waiting for it all year long. We've talked about it. I think, quite frankly, Hakeem Nicks is missing something this year. Whatever's wrong with him, he's not the same player. And quite frankly, we've talked about it all year on the show, Eli Manning hasn't been the same quarterback. Whether it's the protection issues earlier in the year, messing with his head. Last night he got smacked around a lot. The running game not being consistent. You can go down the list, drop passes. This offense simply is not what it used to be, and the days of saying, well, you know, maybe we can get back to what this offense was, it's over. It's a different team. It's a different offense. They're not going to get back to it. Remember, this offense has struggled dating back to the Packer game last year. I mean, we're not talking just this season. We're talking about 12 games this year and, what, the final six games of last season or so? I mean, this is no longer an anomaly, Donnie. These are facts. This is what the team is.
Yeah, I know, and I think the defensive coordinator has gotten better through the season, but I still think that Kevin Gilbride is not calling the correct play. But when you get a third and long and a third down and 10, what are you doing an inside draw? You should be calling for a pass, calling for 11, 12-yard pass, not handing the ball off. I think something with the offense not clicking right, and I think it's the offensive coordinator.
All right, Donnie, appreciate the call, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Have a great one. Thanks for calling. And by the way, I want to say one other thing. I know I get on these tangents. I'm staying calm today, by the way. Considering the fact I'm on 3 hours of sleep, I've kept my composure pretty well this morning. You know, besides my bat when I couldn't talk when I brought in that one call.
There's room to increase on the chippiness meter,
well,
as I like to say.
It's about to go up.
Uh-oh.
What's the one complaint we always have about Kevin Gilbride and his play calling?
Too predictable.
Is going long on third and two predictable? Is that what you would expect him to do? So the moment the guy does something unpredictable, you kill him because he's not doing the right thing. If he does something that doesn't work, oh, you're too predictable. You ran the ball on third and two. They knew you were going to run the ball on third and two. No wonder it didn't work. You knew what was coming. But now you try something different. It's a bad play call. Make up your mind. That's all I'm saying.
I wish this was
on video
every
morning. You can't have it both
ways.
You can't have it both ways. Either you want it to be predictable and run it on third and two. Then we're going to get calls when Andre Brown gets tackled in the backfield like he was the entire second half, by the way. He gets killed for you knew he was going to run it inside on the draw play. They run that play all the time. Of course, it's predictable. Then you go deep. What are you doing? You have to run the football. Well, which one is it?
Fair point.
Which one is it? Come on.
And it gets back to the frustration of how this season has played out.
Of course.
That's what it really the heart of this issue
and
is.
And again, play calling becomes an issue when the players don't execute the play that's called. And they had an opportunity for a 45-yard touchdown pass. If Victor Cruz gets a second hand up or Eli Manning throws a better pass or both. They didn't do it, so Kevin Gilbride looks like an idiot. He's wide open on a double move on a linebacker on a corner blitz. You have exactly what you want. Now, someone made a good point on Twitter. I don't remember who it is. They haven't executed those plays all year. Then why do you do them? Well, you still have to try. You have to try to give your guys an opportunity to make plays. And again, they just couldn't get the job done. That's all I'm saying.
So many factors that you can point to as to why the execution hasn't been where it's been in terms of the lack of separation with the wide receivers, the offensive line play. I mean, we were talking about earlier in the show the fact that why are they more effective running the ball to the right than when they go to the left? I mean, these things are mind-boggling. You know, this team has been so up and down that now it's easy to say, well, it's on Manning, it's on Kevin Gilbride. The bottom line is the best way to sum up this season has been a little of Dr. Jekyll and a little of Mr. Hyde, as we have showcased in seasons past, where sometimes the Giants are clicking, sometimes they're not clicking, and sometimes they're just in this big gray area. But it's not so simple where you could say it's all Gilbride, it's all Manning, it's all the wide receivers. There's just been a combination of factors because a lot of things haven't gone right this season. And you hope that this offseason they'll correct some of those issues by bringing in some new personnel. They'll tweak the playbook and they'll get off to a better start next season. Because if you remove this 0-6 start, you know, even though this team hasn't been great, they're probably still very much in the mix for this division because nobody has seemed to want to run away with this thing. Cowboys and Eagles only 7-5, and they have a very tough schedule ahead of them.
No doubt about it. Though, if some of the reports yesterday that Aaron Rodgers might not play again this season, that all of a sudden
big
makes
break.
The Dallas Cowboys schedule a lot easier.
And that will determine whether or not Green Bay is still in the mix for the postseason bid.
And you almost get the feeling that Green Bay now, the players on those teams that are veterans and normally have a good record or playoff teams, you sense that they might be seeing the writing on the wall a little bit and might be putting the stamp on the envelope a bit after that disastrous showing on Thanksgiving.
Green Bay's 5-6-1. Bears are 6-6. Lions are 7-5. I don't think they're going to be out of it even if they lose next week because I don't even think Chicago or Detroit is going to run away with this thing. In terms of their upcoming schedule,
well,
let's see.
If the Packers lose, though, 5-7-1, and you look at the wild card picture, if the Lions win and go to 8-5, I guess that would make them, right? I mean, you're not making that up. And I think the Lions have the tiebreaker against Green Bay, too, at this point after that win on Thanksgiving.
Well, they split the season series.
Did they split the season series?
So it would have to go to the next Wakanda.
Do you have their division record? No, division record would be next.
Correct. Let's take a look here. The Lions have the Eagles next. They got the Ravens. They got some tough games coming up. Division
record. And the Giants, of course.
Lions are 4-1. Ooh. The Packers are 2-2-1.
There you go.
That's going to be tough to make up.
That's going to be very tough to make up. So, and then in the wild card, the Panthers right now are what, 8-3? Or are they 7-4?
9-3.
They're 9-3, excuse me.
And they're playing the Saints next week after the Saints play Monday Night Football against the Seahawks.
That's going to be a very tough game. And then the Cardinals lost last week. They're now 8-4?
7-5.
All right, so the wild card right now, actually, one of those two NFC East teams actually have a chance to make a run at the wild card here, though the Panthers and the Niners, obviously. The Niners are 8-4, correct?
Niners are 8-4.
So they have some opportunities here to make a little bit of a run at that wild card spot, though I'd be shocked if it wasn't the Carolina Panthers and the San Francisco 49ers in the wild card spots in the NFC.
And remember, if Philadelphia is able to make a run, let's say, and Dallas wins the division, Philly now has the tiebreaker over Arizona because of the head-to-head matchup. The question is, can they get past San Francisco? That'll be the key. And the Niners have a tough schedule.
What do they have left, the Niners?
Everybody in the conference, they still need, and not in the conference, in the division. Ooh. They just played St. Louis. They'll have Seattle coming up and Arizona.
Where are those games?
They are home against Seattle next weekend, visit Arizona. First matchup was very tight. They finally pulled away in the fourth. Then they have a break. They go to Tampa Bay, and they host Atlanta.
I'll tell you what, though. Look, Atlanta's going to be a wipeout. But Tampa Bay has given a lot of teams a lot of problems late in this season. They've played some pretty good football. And give Greg Schiano credit. Both of us thought he was going to be out of a job by now. And he's really kept that team together. And Mike Glennon's played fairly well. With some like 10 touchdowns and no interceptions in his last six games heading into this week or something
Glennon
like that.
Glennon had a touchdown pass in eight consecutive games, which was the first rookie to do that. It just came to a halt this past week. But he was solid. As you mentioned, he has been protecting the football. And their defense, I think, has really done the heavy lifting. That's been a big turnaround. Revis has been in and out of the lineup, but everybody else, for the most part, has stayed relatively healthy.
I have some good news. It might be bad news for you. We're doing our scout meeting late tomorrow, so I'll be with you for the entire length of Big Blue Hits.
Well, that's not really a surprise because you've been teasing me this whole season. You've been pretty much here on Tuesdays.
I've been here more often than not.
I want to say every single week. You always say every week, all right, we're going to have the scout meeting early, and then you wound up doing the entire hour anyway. So, think I'm going to get the whole show to myself and wind up having to split the airtime with you.
I know. That's something you hate to do.
I can't stand that. You know, me having to make sacrifices is not a good position to be in. It's very tough.
Do you want to maybe put a guest on next week? Do you want to look ahead, go around the league? Do you want to mix something up? What are you thinking?
You're talking about tomorrow, or are we talking
tomorrow?
about You know, we usually had brought in a beat writer from the team that the Giants are playing, but granted that mathematically they're not really in the thick of things. I don't know how relevant that would
be. Really. And it's San Diego, and that'll be West Coast
Correct.
Writer.
So
it'll
be impossible to get
morning.
Somebody early.
That's not going to work.
See, now everybody understands the type of meetings we have off the air, so they understand the logic that goes beyond that. We could definitely get somebody on to go around maybe the league, perhaps. Or, I mean, unless we go the route of a Giants beat writer to weigh in on what to expect for the last four games.
I have an idea.
Season.
I'm going to reach out to somebody. We're going to see if we can work something out here, actually. I think we could have fun.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Do you?
Yes.
Okay.
I think I have an idea.
We'll see. All right, Lance.
Fair enough.
We appreciate the time. Any
Sounds
final
good.
Thoughts before we say goodbye or no?
No final thoughts. We'll have more than enough time to continue this conversation tomorrow.
Be with you at 9:30 tomorrow morning. Big Blue Kickoff live on Giants.com. Stay tuned to Giants.com later on today. You'll have the conflict of Coach Coughlin's conference call with the reporters. And you also have Sean O'Hara plays that change of game in his game report as well. For Lance Menno, I'm John Schmelk. Have a great Monday right here on Giants.com. Enjoy.